Blog Talk Radio.
Let's go. Yeah. Ghetto children singing. See, they eager to learn how to become the next world leaders. Brave hearts. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off it. Book one, strategy, tactics, techniques. Look dumb, but massively notice the weakness in all them. Gotta use it only if necessary. Homie, vestige is very real if enemies carrying heavy steel. Beware the thugs who ain't scared of blood or jail time. When Aryan nations ain't having integration, we so blind the beauty of life. Was when my mom said, again, you could be Christ. I wasn't old enough to hold my d***ing P-Right. Jesus, what is he like? I picture him standing with diamonds on him, little different from the way my mommy saw him. Practice your aiming, physical training in difficult terraining. Test your endurance, try to keep your stamina banging, splitting duchess up, strap up. The armies of school, teaching smart ways to go. I'm thinking Gandhi was a fool, the chronic's a fool. Got me thinking out loud. Sleep on my drunkenness, I blow your brains out. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare, warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
My revolution is as real as Bobby Seals. I build with dudes and Chris worth a quarter mil and Dick Hill. For fish gills, the cops, the time come, I mask up and get my comrade off the bus. Up the beef, I snatch a seed from Chuck E. Cheese and feed them to the rats in the back of the peas. Black fatigue and off the scenes on a sofa, 50-inch flat screen, Louis Vuitton holster. My motions don't appeal to appellate division. I did it strong for 7 long years in prison. Of the system, I'm like a modern-day Hitler. Black gorilla, crib and blood in one only. Just know my face, I be the case for the wish at the police. Look at the name Lake, go simultaneously with street revolution. 21 gun salute, the new Huey
Newton. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Teach our woman how to hold a family down in case something happens to us fathers. Protect the children, grab revolvers. The woman plays an important part of our life force of what we fight for. My heart goes to you, beautiful wife in war.
Enlist in war and talk less. Watch all and trust none. Demand your respect and be ready to die for what you believe in. And ride all the time, not just when convenient.
Justice and freedom, wisdom and understanding. We the lost children of Israel in this Western world region. You ain't a man, you a coward if you can't support the girl you put a seed in.
Strong rule the weak, but the wise rule the strong. It's more to a war than just getting it on. Seal your form, cover your tracks, stay prepared. I don't care, no one's spared.
Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here. Revolutionary warfare is warfare, loving war for the cause. I gotta take you off here.
I'm a soldier for life. The battle I'm fighting has no ending. To struggle is to go the distance. To win is not to care how far one must go.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How you feel?
Fine, sir.
How do we get access to this, Jackson?
His lawyers say they can get me in posing as a legal investigator.
You were Huey Newton's lawyer. And now, Mr. Jackson.
Mr. Jackson was sentenced 1 year to life for a $70 gas station robbery.
We have 2 hours.
Waiting a long time.
We need brothers who can maintain their self-respect in here, have true strength.
Some people are comparing you to Eldridge Cleaver, Richard Wright, Du Bois. How does your fame affect you when you're locked up all day?
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Free the Soledad Brothers!
Do you understand that there cannot be a peaceful revolution?
Okay, gentlemen, we're taking over!
Mr. Jackson, I'm sorry about your brother.
They will live to regret it. I'll see you today.
Barry Dordan from TVCSI.
This is the military, David.
Greetings, Lion. Real missionary greeting. Welcome to another edition of Dordan Investment Radio Show. I'm your host, Umar Shakir. Dordan University has 5 goals. I'm a new African prisoner. Our second goal is to eradicate cultural ignorance from our new African prisoner. Our third goal is transform the criminal mentality to a new African mentality. Our fourth goal is to assist in the rebound and stabilization of new African communities. Our fifth goal is to prepare new African prisoners for release, producing new African recidivism. Now, overall goal is to transform the entire prison slave complex to the biggest learn through education and means. While we educate the brothers about enemy lines when it comes to society and be productive in society and the community, be an institution, and be a program to assassinate new African people needs. Before I bring in our guest tonight, I'd like to go a couple of events that happened in history during this week. In 1825, Frances Ellen Watkins Harper was born. She was a poet, teacher, and traveling lecturer for the American Anti-Slavery Society. Frances promoted abolition, civil rights, and empowerment of women. 1862, President Lincoln called a special cabinet meeting to start colonization of New Africa. Secretary of Navy Wells said the president was insistent that he wanted to send the Negroes away. In 1883, the National New African Convention met in Louisville, Kentucky. In 1953, take a giant step, a drama by playwright Louis Peterson opened in Broadway. President Eisenhower ordered federal troops to Little Rock, Arkansas to prevent interference to school integration at Central High School. In 1964, a crowd of 7,500 white people marched protest to increase racial integration at New York City public schools. On September 25th, 1861, Secretary of Navy authorized the enlistment of slaves. In 1938, the world witnessed the birth of Bob Atman Abafumi, former New African political prisoner, founder member of the New African People Organization, a ranker also during the program in Africa, founder member of the African Graduate Movement, the overall New African Freedom Fighter. In 1957, those are the first outborn division escorted 9 New African students to Central High School. In 1962, a New African church was destroyed by fire in Macon, Georgia. This was the 8th church burned in Georgia since August the 15th. In 1963, Sonny Liston knocked out Floyd Patterson and became the world heavyweight boxing champion. In 1979, Barbara W. Hancock became the first New African female White House fellow. Oh, I got some more dates. Go back to 24. I missed some. Okay. In year 2000, September 24th, former political prisoner Jahar Abdul Mumit was released. Also on that date, in 2014, New African founder, founding father, founder of Bridging Program Africa, co-founder, Bobby Herman Ferguson, returns to the ancestors. In 2016, the National Museum of New African History and Culture opened in D.C. That was on the 24th. On September 26th, cabinet meeting, President Lincoln called for a coordinated national and international effort to find a place to colonize Negroes, colonize New Africa. 1899, William Levi Dawson, composer and choir director, was born. 1936, Winnie Mandela was born, New African freedom fighter and revolutionary. 1937, singer Bessie Smith died from injury sustained in an automobile accident near Clarksdale, Mississippi. 1949, United Nations media, Rob Bunche, asked Israel and Transjordan to order immediate ceasefire in Palestine. In 1962, Elder Adil Lugabar Zakir, current New African political prisoner, founder of Georgia University, that's his born day. There are petitions floating around on the Georgia University Facebook page, Twitter, Instagram page, also my Facebook page, Bumai Yehudah Zakir, and all over social media, where you can sign a petition for the release of our comrade and elder. In 1963, the Alabama Supreme Court will hold contempt conviction against Mary Hamilton for not responding when a prosecutor used her first name but called white people Miss or Mr. September 27th, today date, 1822. Around our rebels, the Purdue African USA senator, born free in Fayetteville, North Carolina. In 1862, the first Louisiana Native Guard, the Purdue African Regiment, to receive official recognition, mustered into the Army. The regiment was composed of free New Africans of New Orleans. In 1877, John Mercer Langston, named Minister to Haiti. 1912, the first public blues composition, W.C. Handy Memphis Blues, went on sale in Memphis. In 1935, Mamie Peanut Johnson, the only female pitcher in Negro Baseball League, was born. In 1936, Don Kenes was born. He was a culture innovator, creator of the Soul Train, set in 1993, a venue for New African entertainers, viewers, and New African pride. In 1940, New African leader protested discrimination in the armed forces and war industry at a White House meeting with President Roosevelt. In 1950, Izard Charles defeated Joe Louis in heavyweight boxing championship fight in New York. Okay. Abolitionist, writer, author, freedom fighter, black guerrilla freedom fighter, David Walker, born free in Wilmington, North Carolina. On the same date in 1829, David Walker's appeal, a radical anti-slavery pamphlet, was published in Boston by David Walker. The appeal denounced slavery and called for a slave revolt. In 1833, Reverend Lemuel Haynes, Revolutionary War veteran and pioneer New African preacher, died in Granville, New York at the age of 88. 1864, Richard B. Harrison, active Louisiana, attacked a white man for registering New African voters to hang 22 New African people who defended him, a riot leaving over 200 unarmed New African people and over 30 white people dead. 1828, Coco Taylor, known as Cora Walton, Queen of Blues, was born. September 29, 1910, the first meeting of the National Urban League took place. 1915, Alabama lawmakers barred white female nurses from treating New African male patients. 1914, Booker T. Washington, the first U.S. merchant ship commanded by New African captain Hugh Mozart, launched at Wilmington, Delaware. In 1989, Yusuf K. Hawkins, a 16-year-old New African youth, killed in the Bensonhurst section of Brooklyn by a gang of white youth. The event inflamed racial tension in New York City. Police arrested and charged six white youth. Also, it's another day I missed on September 28th, 1991, Frank Amaya Davis died in New York at the age of 65. Okay. On September 30th, 1750, Crispus Attucks escaped from slavery in Farmingham, Massachusetts. In 1863, in the Whitehall Conference, a delegation of whites from Missouri and Kansas asked for the immediate emancipation of Missouri slaves. Lincoln told them that their set was a little too fast for him and that he still favored gradual rather than immediate emancipation. 1919, white massacred over 100 new Africans in Elaine, Arkansas, as a sharecropper crowd demand fair price for crops. This is known as Bloody September. 1984, the Cosby Show premiered on NBC TV and turned dimensions of the situation comedy and a depiction of a new African family in television. 1966, Moneta Sleet Jr., veteran Ebony magazine photographer and first new African man to receive a Pulitzer Prize, died in New York City at the age of 7. He was cited by the Pulitzer Prize Committee in 1969 for a photograph of Coretta Scott King and her 4-year-old daughter, Bernice King, at the King Printer in Atlanta. In 2008, J.L. Chestnut, first new African lawyer in Selma, Alabama, died. You know, those events that happened in history during this week, of course, there's plenty more, but But that was just to illuminate your mind for a moment. First, I'd like to thank everybody who's been following our broadcast since 2014. Thank everybody in the community kind of educating themselves, building, and doing things positive. I want to salute all the Catholic average citizens, all the political prisons that are currently behind enemy lines, that are staying strong, educating themselves, they're not falling. They're never, like Conrad Jordan, they're never being counter-minded broken men. They're still educating themselves. They're still organizing and putting information out for the people on the outside to follow. And also creating examples and modes of resistance that the people need to see. I thank you all. You know, I'd like to welcome to the show tonight, Single by You. Free land, revolution, green, and peace, bro. Peace. Ed, how you doing?
Grace first, man. Free the lands and all political prisoners now. I'm fine, bro. It's good to be here with you. And I'm going to chop it up a little bit with you tonight. I'm very, very always happy to, you know, follow in the footsteps of the ancestors and those who come before us and gone before us. And appreciate you and the work you're doing, keeping our brother, our ancestor, you know, George Jackson's life and works, words and deeds alive. We know we are all spiritual beings having a physical experience, and none of us are going to be here physically forever, but we certainly will be around spiritually forever, particularly if we do the work to free our people.
Again, I appreciate those encouraging words. You know, at first, I'd like to thank you for coming to our broadcast, right, to tell you now to understand what you can do in the past, present, where you can be in the future, right? And it's always a pleasure to change thoughts with your information with you, right? You know, y'all been a pleasure since first connected with you in 2017, the meeting right March rally in the Black August event that, you know, you always seen that unwavering commitment that you have, right? And that's very inspirational to myself, and well, the other individuals that are younger in the movement in regards to doing certain things, right? In regards to nation building. It's all the inspiration. You know what I'm saying? So I commend you for that, to your presence in
general.
Well,
you know, just doing what I'm called to do, brother. But, you know, it's interesting you mention that date because here I'm here tonight to talk about, you know, Bassani, the Black Star, where it started out, the Black Star Action Network, when it was here in the state in North America. But then when our brother Chief Fode, who's a former political prisoner of war himself, him and a whole lot of other brothers and sisters, along with Malcolm Shabazz, you know, were inspired to work following the footsteps of Garvey and our movement people. So the Black Star Action Network was established. But when it relocated, along with Chief Fode, when he expatriated to Freetown, Sierra Leone, which is actually the first base that Africans actually returned to, and that's a whole nother story. But Chief Fode, as the you could call him the executive administrator of the Bassani, which is now Black Star Action Network International. Now, people can go to www.bsani.org and find out some of the details of a lot of the work that's been going on. But in 2017, the Be Clean campaign was instituted. And the Be Clean campaign is a very serious opportunity for African people to practice Pan-Africanism, global Pan-Africanism, regardless to where you are. Because everywhere we are, we need to be cleaning our environments. That's very important. We also need to clean up our minds, and we need to clean up our spiritual selves. And certainly we need to clean our behinds. So that means all of these Be Clean things are very important. It's a very simple program. And even though we are Garveyites and Bassani is Garveyites and we're working with Garveyites and we support the provincial government of the Republic of New Africa and we support any Africans doing anything to uplift Africans to our traditional greatness and also the PAFM, the Pan-African Fellows Movement, and the UNIA ACL Rehabilitating Committee. Well, those are some of the groups, along with a lot of other local groups, like a group in New York called HALA, groups here in D.C. and different other places. We are simultaneously doing our third annual cleanup. And it's very important for people to recognize we want emoji, we want unity. And we're calling on anybody, regardless to if they're African, whatever their ideology or philosophy may be, to practice being clean, to work to teach our youth, to re-educate our adults of how important it is for us to practice self-determination and self-reliance all the time. So this program, this Be Clean campaign program, is taking place in the third annual. As I said, the first one was in November 2017. And then in October 24th, 2020, was the first annual international, you know, Be Clean campaign. And that's very important to recognize because, you know, the Be Clean thing jumped off in Freetown based on a mudslide that took place. Internationalized that movement in October 2020 and many organizations. And then in November the 12th, 2022, was the second annual, and we had many groups with us, and we're coming up on the third annual, and the base is Freetown, Sierra Leone, Lagos, Nigeria, is also another site. The last time around, Gambia was with us. We also have Jacksonville, Florida, Oakland, California, San Diego, California, Tennessee, Orangeburg, South Carolina, Harlem, New York, Detroit, Michigan, Washington, D.C., and the UK are all on board with this Be Clean campaign simultaneously. And not only do we go out and clean certain environments in those locations, but many of us go talk to young people either during or prior to the cleanup. Yesterday we were at Roots Charter School here in Washington, D.C., the PAFM of North America, the D.C. branch, and the UNIA ACL Division 330. And a brother named Damien, who has a waste management business, we all partnered together. But we were up there talking to the young brothers and sisters about the different aspects of the importance of being clean. Tomorrow morning, we'll be going to Nation House Positive Action Center doing the same thing. And then on Saturday from 10 to 1 here in Banneker City, D.C., we'll be over at Malcolm X and Martin Luther King Boulevard Avenue, and Malcolm X Boulevard, Martin Luther King Avenue, doing a Be Clean street cleanup to set examples of the unity. And all those places I mentioned will be doing the same thing. So Basani is the major group that came up with the concept, the Black Star Action Network International. And I happen to work with Chief Fode, and he may even be on the line now. He's in Freetown, Sierra Leone. The time is real different, but he did say he was going to try to check in. But that's it in a nutshell. We're calling on people to support us, who support the work, because you know, my brother, we need unity on, we got all kinds of problems that we have to address ourselves. And once we're unified and all doing something in common together that's good for our community, we have the basics of unity. Then we go from there to the next level, because there are many issues and problems that we as African people need to solve. When I say free to land, I'm talking about free to land in North America, for the provincial government of Republic of New Africa. I'm talking about freeing the land in Africa. And all of us as Africans need to be unified and to fight with one universal army to protect ourselves against Yorugu and all the onslaughts of white supremacy that have been coming down the pipe for political prisoners and us as prisoners of war, because we are at war.
For the people who don't know who you are, right, or where you're coming from, tell the people about yourself so they can get a gist of exactly who you are, what you're talking about, where you're coming from. Tell them about yourself.
Okay. Sure. Well, I plan to do that. You know, my brother, my name is Singor Jawawa Baye, means descendant of the Most High, peaceful and loving and straightforward. I'm a Garveyite, but I'm a movement brother. Long before I got involved with the government of the UNIA, founded by the Right Excellent Marcus Mosiah Garvey, I was in the movement, meaning I dealt with anybody that was doing anything positive to uplift black people and to raise the consciousness of black people. So I've been in the movement for a while, but I did come into the UNIA in 1979, 1980, when I found out it was alive. Of course, I was inspired by Malcolm X and Martin Luther King. As a young man, I found out a lot about Malcolm X, and I got involved with a lot of the things Malcolm actually got involved with, because I came from the street, you know, street life, and I became more conscious of my African self, and I found out the connection to Garvey. And when I found out Garveyism was still practicing, I heard the Honorable Charles L. James in 1980, and I did not hesitate to connect. Honorable Charles L. James was a living, one of the last living students taught directly by Garvey the course of African philosophy. He became my teacher and leader. I became active in the movement, have been in the movement, and between 1980 and 2016, I had manifested a book of a Garvey's whirlwind journey, which is a Garveyite's whirlwind journey from 1980 to 2016, where I express not only my views, but actually the experiences that many brothers and sisters have had in the movement, most connected to the UNIA, but also involved with the movement on many levels. So we're talking about following the teachings of not only Garvey, but all of our ancestors in the whirlwind, those that we knew and those that we study through our history. So I see myself as a devout student of the course of African philosophy taught by the Honorable Charles L. James, taught first by Marcus Garvey. I had the honor and pleasure of raising up through the ranks and have held several positions in the UNIA, from District Commissioner of Maryland, Virginia, and D.C. for many years, and worked with many president generals, including Marcus Garvey, Jr., Honorable Redmond Battle, Honorable Reginald Maddox, and Charles L. James. I served as third assistant president general for three terms. I was elected in Philadelphia, served several terms at that, and then right after the Honorable Redmond Battle transitioned, I ran for president general and was elected as the president general in 2008 and served 2 4-year terms, with being the ninth successor and the 10th president general following Marcus Garvey himself. So I had the honor and pleasure of being a humble servant and leading the UNIAACL government for 8 years. I still serve today as the first assistant president general, and the brother Akili Nkrumah, who served as first assistant president general under my terms of president general, is now the president general of the what we consider being the UNIAACL Rehabilitating Committee 2020, which means we started to rehabilitate the movement just like Garvey did, just like those who came after Garvey, and just like we are doing to rehabilitate the race itself. Because some Garveyites and some Africans have kind of missed the ball. So my book contains some of the good, bad, and ugly of my experiences of watching what victories we've had in the movement, and also some of the shortcomings and some of the things we must correct to make sure our young brothers and sisters following us don't make the same mistakes. So today, the Rehabilitating Committee, and like I mentioned, the connection of Black Spot Action Network International to the government, we're connected to one another, even though we're autonomous entities. Chief Fode, who is the founder and leader of Basani, and I work as an international coordinator. He also is the High Commissioner General of West Africa. So we have quite a bit going on in terms of history. And as I said, it's important for us to understand it ain't about me, he, or she. It's about we, collectivity. And for us to get our real, real sovereignty back around the world, we have to raise our blacktricity. So I see myself in my 70s as a humble servant. And the hip-hop movement is a very important movement because our young people have celebrating 50 years, but we know that message music goes back all the way back to the times when we built the pyramids. So we really are about clean music, about clean spiritual power, and cleaning our own environments, nation building for the 21st century. So that's a little bit about myself. But as I say, it ain't about me, he, or she. It's about we. Our ancestors are waiting and watching. Many of us know that. Many of us are emulating, and many of those ancestors are coming through us. So it is a serious work that those of us that consider ourselves elders or older ones in the movement need to put up for our young brothers and sisters to free themselves from the bowels of the oppression of Yorugu, meaning the system of white oppression.
So I appreciate that. I understand that you identify as a pan-Africanist, a universal Garveyite, right? What are the differences in those two terms? What do they actually mean?
Well, that's important. Universal Garveyism is very important because I was taught the course of African philosophy, and today I teach the course of African philosophy as well because it was taught to me. It was Garvey left that as a means of helping get us back on course because we got off course. Even the UNIA people talk about the heyday when we had millions. Well, what is happening now? We had the Legionnaires, we had the Black Cross Nurses, we had Black Starched Line. So what happened? We were attacked by Yorugu. Garvey was jailed. And so it's kind of important to recognize universal Garveyism means that you understand the importance of the universal aspects of the UNIA and not just the individuality of the personality of Garvey. So that's what we mean by universal Garveyite. Because many people have latched hold to Garveyism, aspects of Garveyism, but we say universal because that's more holistic. Now, in terms of Pan-Africanism, there are all kinds of Pan-Africanists, but the Pan-Africanists that we consider ourselves to be are the righteous ones who are to set aside our minor differences and to unite around our commonalities. That's the Pan-Africanism that we practice. You have people going around saying, well, you know, Pan-Africanism was this and Pan-Africanism was that. Essentially, Pan-Africanists are supposed to be striving to free the continent of Africa and to free and provide sovereignty and freedom for all African people regardless of where they live. So we don't advocate everybody returning to Africa. However, everybody should return culturally to Africa and spiritually to Africa and economically. But the Pan-African Federalist Movement, for an example, and of course the UNIA government, is all about the United African States, meaning regardless to where you are as an African. And this ties into the topic that you just said, universal Garveyism and Pan-Africanism, is that once Africa is back under our control, regardless to where you live, you know, in here in North America, the Caribbean, Canada, the UK, you have every right to everything that any African on the continent has a right to. Because we were not at the conference that carved up Africa. We look at Africa as a whole. So the whole world belongs to us. That's why I consider myself a citizen of the Republic of New Africa. I consider myself a citizen of the government of the UNIA. I consider myself a sovereign who is striving for sovereignty for Africans going forward. I hope that gave you a little bit of clarity, because sometimes people use definitions and they have their different interpretations of them. But I was taught that Garveyism, you know, African fundamentalism, is very important for us to recognize. That's why we say universal. Some people get caught up with the word Negro. We understand clearly that we are African, and that's why it says Universal Negro Improvement Association and African Communities League. But many of our brothers and sisters don't understand that that's nomenclature. That's a name that was given to us. We know who we are. And so that's why it's important for us to define ourselves and speak for ourselves and not let others define and speak for us.
Yes, sir. That gave me full clarity. I understand that. Like you said, you know, Garvey said we must be the new Negro, right? We must be the new Negro. We must become the new Negro. Y'all said back to Africa. But y'all also said, was our men a big affair? Was our flag? Was our nation? Was our government? So forth and so on, right? So a lot of those examples have been set forth in place, especially in regards to the founding of the Republic of Africa, the independence of Ghana, and so forth and so on, other aspects and deal, but that relate to the whole ideas and ideology that God will push at the moment, right? So I understand exactly what you're saying, and I comprehend what you're saying. Everything makes sense, and you study, you experience, and you actually learn certain things, you know? And like, it's very important.
We're holistic African people, man. Yorugu gave us that divisiveness. So, you know, wherever African people are rising should be helping to raise their brother and sister up. We say Mobutu and Mahat are critical. And that's why it's so important for us to recognize, you know, people tend to try to draw differences between us or try to come at us with our differences. our differences are positive, you know, not negative. I mean, because I can learn from somebody just like they can learn from me. And that's why it's so important. And institutionally and government and movement-wise, it's critical that we are unified and not divisive. Look at what's happening in West Africa right now today, you know, with Niger and the whole Sahel. If they unite and stay unified, can't nothing stop them. But because Yorugu has been divisive, he's also been divisive to Africans here in North America. And let's face it, all of us did not come over here through the transatlantic slave trade. Some of us are tied to ancestral roots that was here long before Yorugu was even in existence. I know I'm jumping around, man. I hope I'm making sense. I just you know, I'm always fired up.
I follow everything. You know, I understand the reason. My next question is, right, what exactly is the Pan African Federalist Movement? And
That's very important. Sheikh Abdul Diop spoke about the importance of federalism, and we ain't talking about this Western model of federalism. Let's throw that out the box. We're talking about an African federalism. During the time of Kwame Nkrumah, he called for a united Africa, and that was the Casablanca group. The Monrovia group won out, meaning Kwame Nkrumah and those progressives that were with Kwame Nkrumah, like Selassie, Haile Selassie, and a couple others that were with him, Sekou Touré, they didn't win out. So what happened was everybody started dealing with their own individual country. I call them states, but individual countries, rather than looking at the whole continent as uniting and whether or not connecting in with the diaspora. So the PAFM, unlike the African Union, is a grassroots group that's working to build a unified base of Pan-Africanists following Sheikh Abdul Diop, Kwame Nkrumah, Thomas Sankara, Patrice Lumumba, and their vision of a united African states. And, of course, Marcus Garvey called for United States of Africa, but now we have progressed and call it the United African States, you know, including Africans outside of Africa. So the PAFM is based in Mali. And the PAFM is working to create North America, for example, has a branch called the North American PAFM, which includes the states and Canada. I've worked with that body, and that body is serious. Then they also have several other bodies on the continent of Africa, regions, and in UK and in the Caribbean, et cetera. So they are working to establish an opportunity where Africans can come from the grassroots and represent, and not top down, grassroots up, and call all the different entities to the table so that we build a federation and soon take control of a united African states. So that's it in a nutshell. But you can go to, you can Google PAFM and find out the websites, because they have a North American website and they have an international website. But certainly you can find them, and they're all Facebook. But they are organizing. I work quite a bit with the international body of that, and I'm pleased to work with anybody. As I said, that's what the UNIA is all about, connecting. We want to establish decrees of Mahat with all the progressive groups. So the PAFM, unlike the UNIA and the RNA, they don't necessarily deal with anything other than striving to bring us together in a federation, a coalition, a large coalition, to sit at the table and to establish things from that point. So they're not into getting – they're not anti reparations, you know, or anti any work that's going on, but they're pro-unifying us as a Pan-African a group of brothers and sisters globally. And it's grew out of Senegal. Many years ago, a group came together and they reached out. And so now they're organizing on that level. But if people want some more details on that, they can send me an email at singorb@hotmail.com, and I can direct them to the leadership of the various different groups, both internationally and nationally, as well as I work with the Nubian Leadership Circle, which is a group that grew out of the Million Man March. And that's important because members of the PGRNA, members of the UNIA, and, of course, all Africans can be tied to both of those, but I'm talking about people that are working when I say members, the Nation of Islam, the National Black United Front, and many other groups in COBRA are all in the Nubian Leadership Circle, and the Nubian Leadership Circle is a national-based group in the United States, or I should say in North America, that's connecting in. And I and the second assistant president general of the UNIA ACL RC 2020, Dr. Chinzara Kahini, we serve as co-moderators of the international cadre, because once you build nationally, you have to be connected internationally to have power. So we have, of course, an educational group. So I'm mentioning all these things because all these things are related. I'm happy to say that I'm also a member of NCOBRA, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America. Brother Obadeli, who's an ancestor now, Chukwe Lumumba, all of them are brothers that I looked up to and continue to look up to and see them in the whirlwind, just like Marcus Garvey.
It's a beautiful thing, man, to see the interrelation of things, right? I want to ask you, what exactly the National Council of Elders, and how did this relate to the work that you're currently doing?
Well, there are many local councils of elders that are established now. I happen to have been invited by my brother Kabila, who was actually one of the founders of Kwanzaa, one of the founding people with Kwanzaa out on the West Coast, and the National Black Council of Elders has been established, and they're working essentially to put together a structure where the elders can pass on valuable information to generations that come after us. There's a local council here in Washington, D.C. There's one in Baltimore. There's one in Kansas City. There are other ones out on California and the West Coast and different other places. All of those groups are not necessarily connected to the national. I happen to be connected to the national and have high respect for anything the elders are doing to help put positive structure together to pass on to the generations that follow us. So that's essentially what the National Black Council of Elders is all about, building. They follow an African tradition. They actually have ties to various different people on the continent, and they work on, they don't just do programs doing Kwanzaa. They work on establishing, after the Kansas City model, as establishing ways and means in their local community the way they can address issues of concern that may be confronted with various different groups in the city and individuals.
Okay. For a younger person that coming to the movement, right, to come into the aspect of developing content, they want to join an organization or want to do some work, what would be a lesson you tell him or her in regard to unity?
You said, now clarifying clarity, you're saying what would I advise them to do? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, what would you advise them to do, or what would you
I would advise them to get involved. I would advise them first to get involved with the UNIA ACL RC 2020 and the PGRNA. That's number one, and number two, both. And if you want to get involved with both, get involved with both, because you can learn a lot from both. Because both of those movements, like I was with the general just the other day here with NCOBRA, and it's kind of important for us to show the next generation that we are unified. So I would suggest we all are looking for younger brothers and sisters to be a part of the movement. A lot of people call it RBG. It's actually the red, black, and green flag for African people worldwide. And it's not just a flag. It's a flag for a government that is about the upliftment of all African people. So I would advise all young people to get involved with some of these groups where you can learn a lot from. The UNIA has over hundreds of years of experience of dealing in the movement. I also would say to my elders, open up your arms to young brothers and sisters. Just because they don't speak your same language, just because they may talk a little different or share a little different thing, don't be discouraged by that. You know, be encouraged by that and also understand that the majority of people under 25 or 28 make up the total population of African people on the continent. So that means the most of the people on the continent of Africa are under 28. So if you're not dealing with young people, you're not dealing with vision. You're not a visionary. So I would encourage all young brothers and sisters. And if you don't want to join the UNIA and the PGRNA, join a movement, join a group, an organization, get involved and strive to clean up yourself the best you can. And don't be wicked to your brother and sister, you know, because that's a trick, you know, to learn that we come from royalty and that we've been above ground and in peace and harmony longer than we've been oppressed and downpressed. You know, so that's very important for young brothers and sisters to know. We're looking for you. That's what Basani, that's another group you can get involved with. If you don't want to deal with a lot of older brothers and sisters, well, even though we got young brothers and sisters in the UNIA, but you can also just join Black Star Action Network International. Get involved with someone, you know, because, you know, this gap, this generation gap that is out there is by design. We have to change that. And I can't just speak to the youth, bro. I have to speak to the older heads. Y'all get real. The reason we face with the problems that we have today is because we haven't done the job. Stop blaming young people. Us older brothers and sisters haven't done the job properly, or we would not be faced with the conditions we face with. We would be passing on strong resources to the youth so that they could get involved and move forward. We didn't be talking about no Black Lives Matter. Of course Black Lives Matter. Any lives come through Black Lives. So, of course Black Lives Matter to us. I mean, you know, but let's be real. You don't beg the oppressor to tell you what, to give you an opening. No, they ain't never going to do it because they would not even be in power if it were not for us. And so we don't need to go to them begging. You know, no. We have to stop pressing us.
You made a real point in regards to bridging the gap between the older generation, younger generation, in regards to doing the work. You know, and from my own experiences, it's all about leadership. You got bad leadership, you have a bad movement. You got good leadership, you have a good movement, you know. And that's what it's about.
Good point.
People being accountable for their ways and actions, people taking responsibility, you know, to move forward. Say, you know, we're at war. It's not a game. You know what I'm saying? We're at war. We've been at war since we've been here. You know, since my white supremacy was established, you know. We've been at war. So it's on us to take us out of that situation. You understand who the Yoruba is, what Yoruba did, but it's on us to take the accountability to make the initial change that we want to see in the world, you know.
Perfect example, bro. Perfect example. And when we get power, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off, but when we get power, it's critical for us when we talk reparations. We don't just want a check. We'll take the check, but we also want land. We want land. We want all of our Mother Africa back, and we want enough land here in North America so that we can go on about the business of our own self-determination and leave you alone and have you leave us alone, period. Period. That's my personal position. You know, I'm not advocating NCOBA's position or UNIA's position or PGR. That's Senghor Baye's position. That's what I would like to see.
Tell us a little bit about the organization, the collective appeal. What is appeal? What is that?
Appeal is an economic group that's established in the Builder Credit Union in Washington, D.C. area. Brother Zana Mack, who's now an ancestor, had a vision. So a group here called LCPAN, which is the leadership of a coalition of black groups here in D.C. area, along with the local council of elders and a couple other organizations, independent schools, spiritual systems, and they've gotten together, and appeal was formed. So they have a lot of programs. They have a co-op that they do every other Saturday. They have a lot of other programs that they do, but most importantly, they're building to try to set up a credit union. And Us Lifting Us, I'm a member of Appeal, and I'm a member of Us Lifting Us. Us Lifting Us comes out of the Atlanta area, and they're similar. They are independent economic movement, and they espouse Garveyism. Same thing with Appeal, same thing with Us Lifting Us. And we know that Marcus Garvey was very high on industry and building economic development. So our economic development groups, our spiritual groups, our independent schools, our Saturday schools, our after-school programs, our social groups need to all unite and be connected to the PGRNA. And the reason I keep on saying PGRNA, people say, well, you know, you mean UNIA, why I keep saying that? It's because people think that the PGRNA and the UNIA are not moving for the same purpose. We're moving for the same purpose, and that is self-determination and rights for us to control ourselves, race first, period. You know, regardless whether it's in Africa or here in the United States, that's not the issue. The issue is both of us are connected, and that's why it's important. You support one, you support the other. And I want to keep it real to brothers and sisters, because I was a supporter of the PGRNA before I even knew the UNIA was in existence. Continuously supported. Marcus Garvey didn't say taking everybody back to Africa. Marcus Garvey said some of us ain't no good to go back to Africa. He was not about taking everybody. He was about taking control of Africa so that we take control of the resources. Africans can live wherever they want. We have every right. We traveled the world long before the transatlantic slave trade. You see? So, you know, study your history. They came before Columbus. You know, we were here before Columbus and the Indians, or the so-called Indians, I should say, because a lot of times people don't understand. I got more African blood than Indian blood. People used to say, we got Indian blood. Well, hey, you know, most of the Indians got African blood, if you really take a good look. But anyway, that's the whole – I don't want to get on a tangent, but, you know, because it's important for people to keep it real. Keep it real.
You know, I'm glad you brought that point up about the UNIA, because from history, you know, there was a lot of UNIA chapters in America. You know, the place, the most chapters in history of UNIA was Louisiana in general. And a lot of the programs geared to New African people over here. You know, they had different programs, different institutions for New African people over here, when it's simultaneous at the same time supporting the aspect or repatriating back to Africa. When you look at situations like that and understand the history, the culture, and the ideals and the methodology of things, you understand that a lot of things are interrelated. They're interrelated within themselves, right? Even in front of the PG, you got Queen Mother Moore, Sir Darby Cox, and various others who were God rights themselves.
Absolutely.
You know,
absolutely.
So everything's interrelated in a lot of different ways, right?
Me and Brother Bilal Suni Ali, you know, our ambassador of beliefs, we talk about that all the time, which how important it is. People don't understand. People in the PGRNA are Garveyites, and you hit a key point. We had more divisions in Louisiana than we had anywhere in the world. We had more divisions in Louisiana than we had anywhere else in Louisiana. So, you know, Garveyism was strong in the South, and that's why it's important for us to not look at the differences. We need to look at what we have in common. You know, because the differences are minor. The commonalities are strong, you know, and that's why the PAFM is important, because just like the UNIA, you know, you mentioned it. Now, under my leadership, I helped revamp the UNIA in the UK. Also, the UNIA now is in Kenya, in Ghana, in Gambia, in Sierra Leone, and we're gaining ground in other places. Oh, Lagos. And a couple other places we're gaining ground. I won't go mention them right now, but we're there now. But under Marcus Garvey, as you said, and those president generals who came after him, the majority of the divisions were here. Now, we had many divisions in Cuba, and we had many divisions in Louisiana. But the majority of the divisions were in North America, because when Garvey left Jamaica and came to the United States in 1916, he saw that Africans were more accessibility to resources here. They weren't necessarily as conscious and as global in terms of Pan-Africanism, but because of Henry Sylvester Williams and Anna Julia Cooper, who did the first 1900, the Pan-African Conference, you know, that energy, Garvey built upon that. And Garvey saw a lot of opportunities when he traveled 38 states in the United States. But then when Garvey came under attack and was jailed and became who was first targeted as a political prisoner to serve a 5-year sentence of something he did not do, that they chomped up as made it political prisoner, they excommunicated him in two and a half years after that in 1927. And his rights were violated again, his human rights, because they kicked him out of North America, and he went back to Jamaica. And then he was attacked, even though he's a national hero in Jamaica, he was attacked by the government of Jamaica, too, and jailed there. So anyway, he ended up leaving Jamaica and going to the UK, and that's where he ended up transitioning. So people need to understand, that's why we say the universal Garveyism, because we have to understand the UNIA has been in many places. The parent body has been in many of those locations I just mentioned, and many locations throughout the United States.
Honorable mention, Queen Mother Moore was the one of the main ones to tell the Garvey to Louisiana. You know, she said defending Garvey when he came to Louisiana, they didn't want to let him who were all armed, and said, we demand Garvey to speak, you know, and that's going to catalyze all across the whole state in regards to UNA being a movement there, an organization, a structure there, you know.
Absolutely. Queen Mother Moore is I had the honor and pleasure of meeting Queen Mother Moore. Study groups that we had here in D.C., we used to bring her here, and I have a great deal of respect for her, and you're absolutely correct. And also Queen Mother James, Estelle James, the wife of Charles L. James, came from Louisiana, and she was there during that time period of Queen Mother Moore. She's an ancestor now also, but she was a Black Cross nurse at a young age and grew up becoming the First Lady. So she told us many stories, too, about New Orleans, just like Queen Mother Moore did, how powerful New Orleans is. Now we also have members in Shreveport, Louisiana, and we're rebuilding, but we do have quite a few members in Shreveport, Louisiana, right now that's under my tenant leadership as a local division officer of the Harambe Division 369. And, you know, for many years we had Harambe Radio, and, you know, unfortunately my brother Delani Amon transitioned, you know, a little ways back. And even though we still have the New Black Learning Channel, my brother, we don't no longer on the air with Harambe. And so we really appreciate the George Jackson University Radio Network and like networks that are continuing to keep the real message out there for our African brothers and sisters to hear. But you can always go to the New Black Learning Channel and see many, many programs that we do ongoingly all over the place, but certainly coming out of Banneker City, we do a Freedom Friday forum every 2 weeks. But that division I spoke about is the Harambe Division 369. I didn't get into it too much, but a lot of what I'm talking about I wrote about in my book, because mostly my book is designed to talk about the ancestors that have gone before us, you know, because there's many. Tony Martin, Marcus Garvey Jr., William Henry Jackson Bay, Kalonji Olusegun. It's so many, man. Chris Crowder, Kamau Robinson, you know, so many. Gene Slappy. I can name so many that have gone before us, brother, because it's more ancestors than it is us, as you know. And many of us actually have worked with some of these brothers and sisters. You mentioned Queen Mother Moore, you know. So it is important for us to recognize that we are spiritual beings having a physical experience, and our ancestors' legacies must live on. And young people must understand that. And I understand young people's frustration. I understand they want to see what's going on, and they want something more clear, clean cut. But you can't microwave the revolution. Revolution got to be baked in a conventional oven. You hear what I'm saying? you got to cook it well, like through the oven. You can't just throw it in the microwave and let the microwave energy cook it so fast, or it won't really be a revolution. It won't last. You know what I mean? And that's just a little thing for our young people to chew on. They say revolution won't be televised. Well, it will be televised this time, but it ain't going to be in the microwave. It's going to be in the oven, meaning we got to cook it up right.
For people interested in obtaining your book, how would it go about obtaining your book?
Well, the best way to get it right now, because, I mean, I'm not opposed to putting it out there other ways, but I chose a self-published. I kind of like a hands-on thing at this point. You can email me at senghorb@hotmail.com. Of course, it is in some local bookstores. It's out in Oakland at Marcus Books. It's at Sankofa Books here in D.C. and any other bookstores that I come in contact with that are black-owned. I haven't put it up on any kind of electronic way where you get it that way. I'm just not into that right now. Later on, I might do that. But you can get it directly from emailing me, and I can tell you how you can do that. And you can also text me at 202-256-2518. Email might take a little longer, but texting me is more expedient, and emailing me is good, but I prefer, you know, calls. I'm not going to really answer too many calls, you know, but I do look at emails at least every day, and I try to get to all of them, but a text I can get right away, and that is 202-256-2518, or you can email me, SENGHORB at hotmail.com. Wow, I just looked up at the time, man. Time flies, man. Woo.
You know, I also wanted to mention, you mentioned Dr. Henry Sylvester Williams, right, who are listening, right? He's considered to be the founder of the term pan-African. You know, he's considered to be the founder of that term, or the people who are listening, right? You know, that predated the Pan-African Congress, Pan-African Conference, you know, predated that, you know. Just for people who are listening, you know, want to gain that particular understanding. People like
Henry.
Talk about him a lot, you know.
You talking about Henry Sylvester Williams?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, Henry Sylvester Williams, and also a lot of people don't know Anna Julia Cooper. Anna Julia Cooper is the sister who ended up coming to Washington, D.C., but she was extremely involved with organizing the first conference, too, in 1900. A lot of people like attributed it to W.B. Du Bois. I'm not going to go there. He came on later. But Henry Sylvester Williams had many people. And a lot of people don't know Booker T. Washington. You mentioned him earlier. Booker T. Washington was a Pan-Africanist. A lot of people don't know that because they think because Booker T. Washington, they look at him as a sellout, but that's not really true. What it was Europeans understood how powerful Booker T. was, and they spoke to him. But it was not a sellout. Booker T. Washington, that's how Marcus Garvey ended up coming to the United States, because he was inspired by Up From Slavery that Booker T. Washington wrote, and a lot of other Africans on the continent too. But there are proof out there that Booker T. Washington was communicating about how to build industry with all of these other Pan-Africanists and people who, you know, before the term was called Pan-Africanism. And you mentioned David Walker. You mentioned some powerful brothers and sisters that, you know, you got to study. You had Edward Wilmot Blyden, Henry McNeil Turner. All these brothers came before. But we leave out the sisters sometime, bro. We can't leave the sisters out, man.
Yeah.
Callie House, Queen Mother Moore. We can't leave them out.
Yeah.
Amy Josh Garvey. Because they were right there. They were right there.
Putting in the work.
And it's... Yeah, yes, sir. And sometimes, and I'm going to call it like it is. I speak truth to power, man. I come straight from the street, not no university. I mean, I went to university, but I'm a street brother, man, and I call it like it is. All these brothers that get in, you mentioned earlier, get into leadership, and their egos take them away from being a humble servant to the needs of the people. You ain't in leadership to serve the people. You ain't in leadership to serve yourself and your self-interest and for the people serving you. That's not what I'm supposed to work. Leadership means pain, blood, and death. It don't mean no Mercedes-Benz and air conditioning and all like that, and the people suffering ain't got no food. Look at what's happening on the continent. Half of the brothers and sisters, half of the brothers is in leadership, you know, they have been controlled by Urugu. But anyway, that's just speaking it, keeping it real, bro.
That's up. You know, at this time, I want to open up a few lines for a few callers. If you got any question, comment, statements of announcement, or you want to talk to the guest, 3-1 at this time. But any question, comment, or statement, or you want to talk to the guest at this time, please press 1 to open your line up at this time. If you have any question, comment, statement, or you want to talk to the guest, please press 1 at this time, or open your line up. Hold up. 404-585, your line is open. If you have any questions, comment, and statement, please just put your time. 404-585, your line is open. Go ahead.
Greetings. How you doing, brother? This is Chief Foday, a gentleman to Ray of the Black Charity Network International.
Chief.
Calling in from Freetown, Sierra Leone. How you doing, Baba Sengor? I've been tuned in all night.
I'm great, brother. It's good to hear your voice. I'm so glad you're
greetings, comrade.
Greetings, comrade. What's going on, man? Free the land.
Like you said, it's been a long time, man. Been a long time. I see you here doing the work, man. Been a long time, man.
Yeah, for sure, man. You know, I was sitting here listening. I'm like, hold up. This is George Jackson University. And this is Baba Singor, and this is, you know, this is the family. But I wanted to call in to just make another connection because it's just so much energy right now just for these forces to be having this conversation and to be having this clarity. Because my introduction to revolutionary political education came by way of the RNA while inside undergoing a revolutionary transformation of consciousness myself. The RNA had the lit game or the literature game on lock, particularly where I was at. There were other entities, NOI, other movements that had their propaganda and information floating around. And I was in the state of Pennsylvania. But what happened is that I believe it was about 2005, we received a letter from I believe it was a brother in Texas. I can't recall his name. And if I could, I wouldn't say it anyway publicly because I wouldn't know if that was safe for him. But brothers received a letter inviting us to partake and be part of establishing George Jackson University. And myself and some of the comrades, we pulled together and started studying, you know, George Jackson, start studying Yorugu and Asafo from Burundi. And we created a little educational environment. It was already there, but we tightened it up because of the ideal that it ain't just us, that GJU is nationwide, and it's the largest educational institution in the world, if you consider the fact that if we're transforming our time into our education, and our education into our true value once we hit the streets. We're talking about an institution that's been literally operating in different form since the beginning of our captivity. There's always been the internal struggle for a higher consciousness and the liberation of our people within every population and every era of our struggle. You won't find a day or a year or a decade without revolutionaries in the midst. And so GJU is my alma mater, so to speak. You know, I got a GED. I didn't go to college. I went to GJU, you know. So I just wanted to point that out as well, is that we can get this education from many different sources. But at the end of the day, it's about the unity that we create with it. And that's what this Be Clean campaign is about, the unity that we can create with it. There's many different ways, but like Baba Singor was saying, is that this question of being clean is not just one-sided thing. It's not just about picking up trash or garbage off the floor. It's not just about having good hygiene for your personal self. You know, it's about raising the awareness in our community towards proper environmentalism, psychological care, because this mental health issue that we have, this crisis that we have, living in dirty environments and, you know, engaging in dirty and filthy activities, all that does is exacerbate it all. It's not part of the solution. It's part of the problem. So just trying to give our people some clear, clean, proper education. And here in Freetown, we're taking the lead this year from what Baba Singor, Brother Sam, the brothers from the PAFM, from the UNIA out there in D.C., what they did last year gave us an idea for how we want to move this year. And that was to pair with the educational institutions and go into the educational institutions as extracurricular education. So we, this year, will be partnering with a secondary school and mobilizing students to do a campus cleanup and make some improvements in terms of the waste management facilities. But after that, we'll also be engaging this school at least for two more events before we wrap up. And we'll be recording it all so that anybody in the world can get access to that information and implement locally wherever they are. And that is exactly what and how Bassani understands our role to be as organizers, as advanced organizers, with operations and members literally all around the African world. We have the ability to, through our communications and through our collaboration, begin to develop new ways to innovate using this technology, innovate using these different ways to control finances, just everything, and upgrade the whole way that we can fight this struggle at different levels and layers. So I just wanted to put that out there and say, man, you know, it's always free the land and free them all. Our differences in organizational affiliations is petty. It's petty at the end of the day, because we have the same enemy and we're the same exact people. It's not like we're talking about being allies of one another. We're the same people. And so this is about finding the best way to work together and make it work for the people. In the next 30, 40, 50 years, most of us who are, cut and credible in this struggle, we won't be here no damn more. And we're supposed to be right now breathing the next generation and taking care of those who really need it, brothers and sisters in prison, brothers and sisters who suffer from drug abuse, the elders right now who are afraid to walk outside because of COVID. We need to be there for these people. These are our people. No one else has really the responsibility. And that's what race first is about. And that's the difference between Garveyism and ordinary Pan-Africanism. Garveyism is going to put it first based on race instantly. Now, I don't care what your tribe is, what your level of education is, what your class background is, or what your organizational affiliation is. Are you an African? Because according to our Constitution, every African is a member worthy of consideration by the association. So I'll yield there, but I just had to chime in and appreciate you for giving me the platform and the time. Thank you.
I was just about to mention that, you know what I'm saying, that you're one of the early members of GJU, right? I was going to mention that, right? And also the aspect that, you know, that GJU has experienced various attacks by the government, the Fed, so forth, so on. You know, in regards to our co-founders, our founders. You know, but we see a position over the years, and like Conrad George said, we must set our course and come together and recognize what's going on. You know, in regards to this reality that we're facing, right? You know, fast as we here, so we got to see that. To be able to see beyond that and understand how we can actually have this collective unity and moving forward. And like you said, you know what I'm saying, free no land in general. And, you know what I'm saying, if we identify the land in America, we identify the land in ancestral land. We got to free the land in general from all the oppression, white supremacy, patriarchy, so forth and so on. So it's always a pleasure, you know what I'm saying, to have you aboard, you know, your light, you want to understand it, man. You know, just put it forward, you know, and see that you're still on board and you're moving forward in regards to movement. Right? It's always a pleasure, bro.
Yeah, he ain't Mr. Beat, bro. You know, and that's important, man. Consistency is critical. And it's something I just want to share real quick. You know, I'm so happy Chief got in with us. It's important for us to recognize, even though we're doing the annual Be Clean, we want this Be Clean thing to happen all the time, everywhere. And the more of us that get on board, the more of us that get our hands involved in it, the more of us that start teaching the youth, it shows practical Pan-Africanism. Practical Pan-Africanism. And there are other programs that Bassani has that are practical as well. But we got to crawl before we walk, and we got to walk before we run. And we know we the best athletes on the planet, no matter what game we playing. So this game is a cleanup game. You know, it's not NBA, It's not NFL. It's a cleanup game. And if all of us are playing it, we running the show, race first.
I want to say we got to be born. We got to be born before we're able to do all that. You know, we got to be reborn, you know what I'm saying, as a newborn, as a new
true
person.
True.
Man, a woman to do all that. You know, I got a message for one to come, but he wanted me to ask you, how do you practice like August yourself? You know, that was what he wanted me to ask you. Yeah.
Oh, absolutely. Yep. Black August was established to focus on political prisoners. And our position is all of our political prisoners should be freed, but also prisoners of war. So we support Black August tied to what we call Mosiah Month in the UK. We tie it to the Garvey movement. We tie it to the works of the provincial government of Republic of New Africa that took place in August. August is a big month. So for us, Black August is a door opener to educate young brothers and sisters and to encourage brothers and sisters to support our brothers that are in lockdown, you know, our political prisoners in particular, but all our brothers and sisters that are in lockdown. Too often we forget about them, you know. It's just like our ancestors when they passed, you know, and our brothers and sisters in lockdown, we forget about them. We got Matula Shakur, I work with Brother Kokiah Patterson, who was carrying on the works of Matula Shakur here in D.C., you know, AWOP. And we voted with him when he came out. We are very clear that brothers and sisters outside of the penitentiary are prisoners of war also in their mind. So the biggest thing we do during Black August is support it. In terms of the ritual stuff, I've done it before in terms of the fasting and things of that nature. But my primary objective is to educate, elevate, agitate, and organize.
Chief O'Day, I have a question for you. You still online, Conrad?
He may not be as late over there, you know. Chief?
I think that line still, I still got the line open, so I thought he still was. He might have got off.
Can you hear me?
Oh, there he
yes,
is.
Sir.
There he is.
Hello?
Sir. Yeah, I can hear
you. Yeah, we hear you, too.
Okay. I want to ask you, in regards to Sierra Leone, right, is Sierra Leone currently accepting repatriates and new Africans over there, or what is that particular policy, or what's going on with that in particular, like a lot of other African countries are?
Yeah, absolutely. First of all, I think that Baba Senghor touched on Sierra Leone's special relationship to the African diaspora earlier. But Sierra Leone, as a modern nation state, former colony of Britain, has a very, very, very close and intimate relationship with particularly the new African population in the modern day United States of America, especially those from the Republic, those from the area, those from the land. Those particular states, that Florida, that Georgia, that South Carolina, you know, that Mississippi, that Alabama, that area right there, the Africans who would find the majority of their ancestors who are buried in the United States within the last few centuries that descend from enslaved Africans would find themselves the roots. There's a very, very, very strong connection to this particular country in terms of where the slave traders in Charleston sourced their Africans from at the height of the transatlantic slave trade and throughout it, particularly for Charleston, which 40% of the Africans brought directly from the continent into America first arrived in the port of Charleston, but a whole another 20 to 25%. Just right down the coast in Savannah. There's a lot more over in Louisiana and other places, but in Virginia. But it was Charleston was the epic center for the arrival. And so, what happens with Sierra Leone is that it was Africans who were formerly enslaved in the United States of America, or let me say the 13 British colonies. Before there was the United States of America, who fought on the British side of the American Revolutionary War, that were evacuated with the white loyalists as black loyalists and resettled in Nova Scotia. In 1792, a group of almost 1,200 of them returned back to the continent on the first ever successful repatriation and resettlement occurrence in our history that we know of that we can absolutely say it happened first. So Freetown is the result of that, where I live. I've been here almost 11 years. It's called Freetown because it was established by formerly enslaved African people. And it became a free settlement in the midst of the transatlantic slave trade still being at its height. And so, there's a lot more history there, but because of that, the culture and the history here is connected to that as well. And so you'll find it reflected in their narration of their history. You'll find it in their museums. You'll find it in their own narrative of who they are. Is this intimate connection. So when you're asking about the citizenship, I'll speed it up and say, since around, I think, 2011, Sierra Leone gave its first citizenship to a member of the African diaspora, particularly a man by the name of Isaiah Washington, who was an actor, Hollywood actor. He's still out there. But he had took an African ancestry DNA test, particularly African ancestry DNA test. And the results brought him back to having a connection to two of the ethnic groups in this country, one on his maternal and one on his paternal side, his X and his Y. And he came back, he was invited back. Of course, he's in Hollywood. He was able to meet the higher-ups and work the system. And somehow, some way, he ends up getting his citizenship based on him having this DNA evidence. When I got here in 2013, no one had been awarded it again, and no one was here advocating for it for the rest of them, for the rest of the people who actually took the same DNA test but hadn't yet been given a process. So we started that process, and in 2019, the current president, Julius Madibou, he gave the first group citizenships on arrival, the people who took the DNA test with citizenship to this country. I think it's a group of 8 or 9. Since then, there's been over 400. And November, December this year, we'll probably be bringing a whole other batch of over 100 to get their citizenship. So it's a real, real deal thing. That's 500. By the end of this year, it'll be up to 500 citizenships since 2019. And that's what's happening here. And then also, Sierra Leone and Liberia are the only two countries that have their modern state formation connected to the return of African people from the United States of America. These are the only two countries in the world that have that distinction on the African continent. And it's reflected in our constitutions. Liberia and Sierra Leone are the only constitutions that have a Negro clause, N-E-G-R-O. We're talking about the Universal Negro Improvement Association and the names. We play too much about things. Negro was a scientific term that was used in law for a period of history that we did not have control over what term we would be called. But because of that, it's a historic term. And even today, it's still used in science and law in certain places. So because these constitutions are older, they have Negro clauses because they used the word Negro back then. It doesn't say African clause, not in their constitution. And so I think it's the same thing with the UNIA. As well, Negro is more of a scientific term that was used legally to define all African people, black people who had, phenotypically black people, African descendants. So here you have to be a Negro in order to get citizenship, to be naturalized. So it's protected. Anybody can't come here and get it unless they got some higher connections. And even if they do, it ain't open to everybody. You know, there's loopholes in the system, but this country's citizenship is only for Negroes. And it has one of the shortest terms, which is 5-year term. Once you come and you get your permanent residency, you conduct your business for 5 years, stay out of trouble, immigration will give you your citizenship. You become a naturalized citizen. So Sierra Leone is very, very open. And I'll say it's about at least 30 to 50 people who are at least living in the country part time at this moment. And again, when I got here, there was nobody else. I couldn't hook up with nobody and say, "Yo, man, show me the way and where do I shop?" And I was here by myself. So to see it go from that to this, that's what's going on in Sierra Leone.
I appreciate that, good brother. You know, I want to add on to what you're saying about Carolina, South Carolina, Savannah, Georgia, right? Historically, those places are known as the Twin Cities. South Carolina known as the port city, Savannah known as the seaport. You know, and they're also considered to be what you would call the Gila Gucci Nation as well. Like you mentioned earlier, you know, a lot of the slaves came from a certain area in Africa, right? So they had a certain tradition that they didn't care with the indigenous tradition what they had, right? And also a place where one term a lot of being the Maroon people that ran away to what one called the Dismal Swamp, right? There's a lot of history in those areas in particular. You know, it's a lot of people that still carry that 100% African gene in those places that never been, that someone never been tainted. Someone never been saying like that because they just still remain that because they never were subjected to that by a lot of them being runaway Maroons and being rebellious people, right? So they were never subjected to certain things. So they still have that percentage there that exists right now, you know, in the side of the globe. For the people who are listening, I just wanted to mention that.
Yeah, y'all dropping some real serious our story history, and that's very, very important. You know, I always say, my brother, that at least 80% of the Africans in North America. And I said North America. I want somebody to prove different.
Absolutely.
Africans, North America migrated from the South. And the majority of Africans in the South have gullah ties.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. When we say New African, we're talking about an identity that was formed in North America or in exile as a consequence of the transatlantic slave trade and the forced enslavement of our people. Gullah Geechee is an identity that wouldn't exist without it. And it's definitely a new African identity and culture that still exists to the day that's distinct, unique, and connects to the majority of our people if we truly dig up our genealogy and take the time to know where our ancestry is traced back to and what it would imply in terms of identity. You're absolutely right. Even when we're talking about this connection between, you know, Sierra Leone and us, here we speak Creole. Creole is very, very close to Gullah Geechee language. In fact, the Creole here is the offspring of the Gullah Geechee there because the people who came back, many of them spoke the Gullah Geechee, like the founder, Thomas Peters, who was from Wilmington, North Carolina. This Gullah connection is very, very key. And I've witnessed Africans respond differently to a person identifying as an African-American or a person like myself saying, "I'm a Gullah Geechee," and explaining why I'm not an African-American. They totally get and understand that some of us kept a name that was inspired from our African names. Some of us kept traditions and burial rites and relationships to the land and family. And spirituality, we didn't change those things. We adapted them, but we didn't change them. And I believe that Gullah Geechee has a great opportunity for us to revolutionize the culture. When we talk about Sankofa, for us, it has to go in steps. You don't just jump back over the ocean. You don't take a DNA test and find out that your family comes from Zulu roots 10 generations ago, and you jump over the 9 generations before that Zulu ancestry. You can't do it. Spiritually, you're violating. So we have to get to the roots of who we are right there in that bastard-ass land over there and trace it and make sure that we know who we are so we can know how we can reconnect to the continent. I've found living relatives. I've met living relatives, relatives who were born here in Sierra Leone and share DNA connection with me and my family. here in Freetown. And it's a powerful thing to be able to finally silence the speculation within yourself. So, yeah, man, we have to emphasize on these cultures.
Bomani, you mentioned something that was very important. You mentioned, you know, it's very important because you mentioned Maroons, and I want to stress the fact that Garifuna, if you go further south, the Garifuna, who our brother Bilal Sunni Ali, who has his ties, he knows his Garifuna roots. But I want you, we were talking about my book, and I'm just show you how the ancestral energy is so powerful. And while I was president general, I met with the chief justice of Belize. People know we have been battling for land, some land that belongs to the UNIA in Belize. And the chief justice of Belize, get ready for this one, chief, because I don't know whether you know that. He was from Sierra Leone. And he's the one that opened the door for us.
Okay, is that why his name was Touré?
His name was Abdullah Conte.
Okay, Conte. Okay.
Conte, and you know my brother. You know my brother, Swami Gyan Kirti Abdullah, that has land down in South Carolina, 135. He knew his family because he was from Sierra Leone, and so it was interesting because when me and the Consul General in Zama met him, it was like we were you know, tied automatically, and he's the first person in the government that respected us and opened the door for us to negotiate with the prime minister. Did you hear what I said? And we found out he was from Sierra Leone. so I'm just the reason I mention that is because this is a huge world we're living in, but we all are connected, and when you find those connections.
Yeah.
You begin to understand how Yorugu has been so divisive to keep us divided. And I mention that because Bomani mentioned Maroons. Well, when we traveled with Renoko Rashidi and went not only to Belize, but went to Mexico and in between Mexico and there, the name is just sliding. But anyway.
St. Vincent.
Huh?
St. Vincent is where they're from, the Garifuna, eh?
No. I know that's the roots. But I'm saying they moved from when they rolled from St. Vincent, they went into Belize, they went into Belize, and the other one I can't think. Start with a G. My eldership is getting to me.
Guatemala.
But anyway, Guatemala. We visited all those spots and actually saw brothers and sisters
that were pure African.
And
also some of Louisiana here as well.
Oh, no question. Well, you know, not only that, when I went to Senegal, brother, I went to St. Louis, and we saw roadways that were built very similar to the way roadways were built in New Orleans. And we were told that the Senegalese had a lot to do with that. So it's a lot of similarities. Now, I don't want to take us away from but I'm just trying to show us the whole world is ours. The whole world. But Africa is the center of the world, and that's where most of the resources are at that Yorugu is raping, and that's why he keeps us away from being in the power zone that we should be in. But remember what I was saying to you, Bomani. No matter where you are entitled to be tied to the sovereignty of the continent of Africa.
Yes.
That's very good important. That's very, very important.
You know, it's so important you would say that.
I got a caller want to ask a question, right? So we'll open the line for the caller, right?
Okay.
All right.
Hold up. 614-285. You have any questions, comment, or statement? Go ahead. Your line is open. 614-285. Your line is open. Go ahead.
This is Elder Mama Kandi, Bureyardi, Free the Land. It's good to hear y'all, brothers, this evening. Thank you so much. What made me decide to push one and participate, out of everything you said, you mentioned Abdullah Conte. My name is Elder Mama Kandi Conte Bay. So when you started talking about my family, I had to call in. There was another point y'all are making, and I wanted to participate in. When you talk about Africans being a global people, one of the things that white people did was change the language. Mm-hmm. And it's very strategic why they would, because there are things that we can understand better if we knew what the original word for a thing was. For example, North America, we originally called it Afmorica. Af is a prefix that means black. More, that's obvious. Ra, ka, spirit, the land of black people, sun and spirit. Afmorica or Afmerica, Mary, when you translate it, it means love. So the land of black love and the sun and spirit. The Ben did a 2-volume text just on the name Africa, and when they got done with it, it came out to be Afra-U-I-Ka. Mm-hmm. And white people just have gone all over the world and changed things. And it makes me ask myself questions like, okay, that being true, what did Afghanistan really mean? Sound like Afghana. Stop. So I love languages. I'm really big on languages. They've taught us that Latin is a dead language. But when you look in the medical books, what language do you think they're using in them books? So it makes me know that Latin is not a dead language. It's one of the languages of the pyramids, because that's where the original medicine came from. So it's just a matter of, like you said, study. We got to study. We got to read. You know, Chris Rock once said, if you want to hide something from black people, put it in a book. We got to read. One more thing I wanted to say, add to what y'all are saying, is you have folks who don't know that Africa was and is one people, one nation. You know, we all came out under one law. And I keep saying, that's not true, that's not true. Why would you want to promote the differences, the combative energy? Why don't you want to be a unified people, umoja? Why you don't want to do that? And I say, if you read Chancellor Williams' book, I think it's page 200
Destruction
and something.
Of Black Civilization. Of Black Civilization.
When you read that, they had the Constitution for the entire continent in the book. And I think I'm going to just yield at that point. Thank y'all for being, and thank y'all for sharing.
Queen Mother, appreciate you.
Appreciate it, Elder Mama Khan.
Yes, sir. I yield.
You want to respond to that? You want to add on to that Bob single about you? You want to see 4 days? You want to add on?
No,
to that?
I just know I'm one to believe African women rule, and she came right in on time. You know, the ancestral energy and the energy of our African women, and I don't need to add too much more on what she said. She's very, very on point when she says we've been taught to speak with forked tongue, and got away from our natural cultural heritage way to communicate. And you know, I'm high on a term called blacktricity. I didn't talk about that tonight, but to me, you know, the ancestors called that one to me, Blacktricity, because, you know, it ain't nothing like the feeling. You know, they can't fake us up. It's like you can't fake the funk. You know what I mean? And black people are very, very in tune to vibes, vibrations. And I believe from vibe to spirit and then to soul. You know, in other words, I believe you'll vibrate, you have a vibration first. It rolls through spirit, and it manifests through the subject of universal life, which is you. And one of the most important things the sister said is we got to understand the wholeness of ourselves, the wholeness, and stop the divisive stuff. And this individuality is Eurocentric. We are collective people. That's why we say Mbutu and Mahat. But I'll stop right there. I know Chief knows how I feel about that. You know, we won. Only the water separates us.
That's a beautiful thing to be having your conversation, man. You know, just trying to start sharing information, you know, and it's all about education for liberation, you know, in regards to everything we do. I have a question for you, Bob, as well as Chief O'Day. When you hear the name George Jackson, what does that name mean to you? That's for both y'all.
Resistance, revolt, change, rejuvenate, revive, revolt. I'll stop right there. You there, Chief?
Yeah, Chief. All right.
Yeah, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, man. When I hear the name George L. Jackson, I guess for me the first thing that comes up is like Field Marshal. He was the general. There was a time in our struggle where I believe that George Jackson was the most powerful black man in the world at one point. In terms of his capacity to influence the prison struggle at a time when the prison struggle had taken over the vanguard position of the black power struggle. He represented that, that last surge and set it off and, ultimately was martyred. So I think of George, man. I put him in the same category of Shaka Zulu. Put him in the same category of all the great warriors of the past, as well as intellectual leadership, because I found great value from what he taught us. You know, so I think of George. I think of a gorilla, straight gorilla, man, dragon.
I have one more question for you, Chief. Black Auger being practiced in Sierra Leone, or has it even been introduced to the people over there?
Nah, it hasn't. One of the things we've been trying to do here is establish a base so that we can begin to institutionalize the cultural revolution here. People here are still largely still caught up into religion, and you know, in terms of their, you know, how they socialize and do things culturally, particularly in cities. In the countryside, you'll find people having that same relationship with their traditional beliefs. But, we were able to do Kwanzaa last year. We do ALD here. We've done ALD for the last few years. So slowly but surely, we're beginning to institutionalize these times to get together. They do observe things like Black History Month, but there really has been nothing in terms of the institutionalization of Black August, and I think we're really on a path to tackling that moving forward because of some discussions that's happening on the ground between different progressive forces. But now, no, and I can speak for Sierra Leone. I'm not sure if it's anywhere else, but here, nah.
I think it's important to Romani to recognize what we're working on with the educational is to re-educate. You mentioned it earlier that we have to deprogram and reprogram. Africans here in this hemisphere, as well as all around the world. And the UNIA is working on creating, using creative ways to educate and to share some of the institutionalization. It's like, let's look at the Black Panthers, for an example. Brother Renoko Rashidi met the Black Panthers in India before he transitioned, also the Black Panthers in Australia. So, but it's our duty, it's our job to educate brothers and sisters all around the world of the institutional builders, such as things like Black August. And so as we move to educate and to deprogram in some cases, because we've been so programmed, and Chief mentioned religion, we're one spiritual people. We need to get away from when Mugabe said one God, one name, one destiny. He understood clearly liberation theology, that the oppressor understands such as how spiritual a people we are and culturally tied. So what they did was painted all the various different religions, all of them. And when I say all of them, I'm talking about all the mainline ones that most people know of, Islam, Christianity, and Judaism. And so, consequently, a lot of that energy has spilled over into other isms or other religions and caused problems for us, divisive things, demonic things, evil things. So we need to get back to the basics of our tradition of being spiritual people guided by our belief systems and not by a tainted one. And I had to get into that because we didn't talk much about that, but I did mention being clean. When we say be clean, we're talking about have a clean spirit. You know, Malcolm X taught us. He said, hey, if Islam might work for you, don't mean you got to beat your brother over the head with Islam. If you're a Christian, don't mean you got to force this person to deal with Christ. That's not how you deal with it. If you're a devout Christian, if you're a devout Muslim, if you're a devout Jew or whatever, and you're a traditionalist, you got to meet your brothers and sisters at the table where they are. You can't push them to where you want to go. That's Eurocentric. We all are spiritual beings having a physical experience. So it's not about my thing over your thing. And that's what we got to get out of. So we say let no religious scruples and no political machinations divide us. Because that's what happens. They use religion and politics to divide us. We need to be whole. I hope that made a lot of sense to you, Bomani, because and your listeners, because that's some serious stuff. We've gone to war. We've killed each other over it. And we need to really be really clear. What Garvey was talking about, he said, let no, not just Garvey as an individual, but the UNIA, let no religious scruples and no political machinations divide us. That don't mean we tell people how they got to pray or how they got to believe. You know, you tie into the Most High how you see fit. If you say you don't want to tie in, hey, tie into yourself. Kwanzaa is a perfect example. Chief said that Kwanzaa is over in Africa. Kwanzaa is all around the world now. It's the principles, though. It's not so much Milana Karenga, people all get caught up in Milana Karenga. No, it's about the principles of Kwanzaa. But anyway, I don't want to get on a takeoff. But the bottom line is we are spiritual beings having a physical experience, and there's no reason why we as African spiritual beings cannot unite despite our differences and despite our different languages.
Hey, you know, I want to add on briefly to that. I'm going to ask for your final comment. Upon my own study of Garvey and UNIA, I understand that Garvey united people of different religion, believe religion, pray together up on the one African movement, up on the one African nationalist movement, right? For instance, he had a strong relationship with Deuce Muhammad Ali, who was considered a forerunner for Noble Drew Ali and the Morris Sion Temple. You know, he brought that connection in regards to Islam, Pan-Africanism, when Yusuf Muhammad Ali collective became UNIA members. You know, they embraced the concept of that, right? It goes to show you, you know, in regards to the religious aspect of things, that it didn't matter in regards to your spirituality, religion, or faith, because Garvey himself was a Catholic as well, you know, which is a Christian-based faith. But he identified being an African with primary before anything, like you said, with race first. I just wanted to mention that, yeah. You know, in general. But also, I think we got like 8 minutes left, well, a couple of minutes left. I want you to give your final thoughts as well, right, before we go out.
Well, I want to pay my respects to all our Muslim brothers and sisters, all our Christian brothers and sisters, all our Jewish brothers, all our Rasta brothers and sisters, all our Yoruba, all our Akan, Vodun, and all of that, because all of that is welcome with the UNIAACL, as you said. I want to make it clear that we are not anti anything. We are pro-African first. So if you're a Christian, you're African Christian. My closing remarks would be, y'all, we've been keeping it plain and speaking truth to power. You know, it's not about Singo, it's not about Bomani, it's not about Garvey, it's about all of us working together, each one learning from one another. I don't care how old you get, how wise you get, you can always learn something. So when you start talking about education, we ain't talking about being trained to be a workaholic. You know, we're talking about being educated from an African perspective, meaning all the public education that you've gotten, all the universities that you went through, that was a training process. You can turn that and use that in our favor, but you have to Africanize yourself. You have to become conscious. So as Marcus Garvey said, a leader burns the midnight lamp. Read and study. Be careful not to look at their writings and think that they're speaking truth to power if you have not written it. Now, we're living in a great time right now. We're living in a time when many books are out there. They're trying to beat back the books. We had our brother Brinoco Rashidi, that's an ancestor. We got a film coming out right now that's ready to be shown around. His work still continues. So remember, we, our ancestors are waiting and watching, and many of us. So it's not so much about our physical being as much as it's about our spiritual and mental being. So we say thank you, Brother Bomani, and long live the legacy of George Jackson. Long live the legacy of all our ancestors in the world win, because we're going to win. No matter how much it looks like we're not, we may wallow in defeat because of our apathy, but we're raising up, and we ain't going to take it no more. We're rising back to our traditional greatness in the 21st century. Ashe.
Yes, sir, Ashe. Oh, okay. Chief, you have something to say? Go ahead. You have something to say, Chief? Go ahead. Go ahead. Go ahead before I get my final ball. You have something to say? Go ahead.
Now, I just want to just appreciate you, Bomani, you know, for the work you do, and just thank Baba Singor as well for taking the lead on, you know, spreading the word about what's going on Saturday. I just wanted to also just give a last call for those out there who want to, you know, support what we got going on. They can check us out on Facebook, Black Star Action International. Most of what we have going on is there. They want to make a contribution, which we're still in need of some resources. They can do it there. They can follow the links there as well. And, you know, just in closing, man, I just want to say just keep up the good work, brother. Keep up the good work, Brother Bomani. Got mad love and respect for you, the comrades out there that's really still holding it down in the trenches, making sure that at the end of it, we still going to be there. We still going to be standing. All right? So I'll say Kimbunga. Kimbunga is a Kiswahili word. It means whirlwind. Kimbunga wa Africa. This is the African whirlwind.
Again, I want to thank you, Bob, for coming out of the show. I want to stand. Thank you for your past, present, future. Also, thank you, Chief O'Day, for the work you're doing currently. You know, if anyone had any comrade, close associates, or friend behind any of the lines, please check out George University. You can be found on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, named George Jackson University. We also have a George University page on Facebook. We also have a website, which is www.georgejacksonuniversity.gu.com. Again, it's www.georgejacksonuniversity.gu.com. And the words I found, I do believe about secure, long live the gorilla. And the words Comrade George, long live the gorilla. And, you know what I'm saying, long live the independent movement. Here I'll catch you out of sitting in political prisons and the struggle for land and independence. Peace.